So what I will talk about primarily is ultra-cold KRB. However, if there's time at the end, I'd like to show how we make the triplet state of RB2, which is actually quite easy to do. And that'll just take a few minutes if there's time, following up on Kirk's presentation yesterday. The spectroscopy, in terms of reasonable resolution, began with Amanda Ross, I think, in about 1990, during the first spectroscopy of KRB. That's been followed up by work in many labs, Eberhardt TMODs being one of the most notable. We've also done a lot of work on KRB. It's interesting in that there are multiple high-quality ab initio calculations, very good quantum chemistry that typically, you know, for example, for the RB2 states that I'll talk about in this second part, I think the difference in energy between ab initio from Olivier Delieu and Aymar with the experiment is between 17 wave numbers and 100 wave numbers for 5 states. That's pretty darn good, and RB2 is pretty heavy. So that's been very helpful.
Well, their calculations are not ab initio, right?
No, no.
I mean,
they're semi-empirical, slightly. That's true.
So we do better.
But okay, so, and they have spin orbit. This is including the spin orbit. And so actually they're extremely helpful to the experimentalist to figure out where things are. So let me go on. And, you know, basically this is the way we think about things: cooling, trapping, spectroscopy, then collisions and degenerate gases. Those are the things we're interested in primarily, not so much in an optical lattice. I do want to say a few sort of interesting things that the way we view some of the interesting collisions before I get started with the spectroscopy. And these are papers that we've published on photo association itself. After photo association, you end up with ultra-cold molecules that could be trapped or untrapped. And you can detect the spectroscopy of those molecules. That's a different thing than the photo association, although they're closely related. They're both long range, roughly speaking. And then finally, we've recently been pursuing with a group in Korea the combination of very nice supersonic molecular beam experiments and ultra-cold molecule experiments. And the group includes Ed Eiler, Phil Gould, and myself. Dave Romlo recently left. He was the postdoc. He's now employed in Santa Barbara. But the graduate students, NSF and AFOSR, and collaborators include Dajun Wong, who's in Hong Kong, and these three people in Korea. Whoops. There we go. So one interesting thing is to look at this was based purely on looking at collisions that had been theoretically calculated, although there are experimental results for this very simple process, H2 molecule being relaxed by helium. If you look at room temperature, it's about 3 times 10 to the minus 17 in standard units, falling off exponentially to 100K. If you extrapolate the 3 times 10 to the minus 17 to 10 millikelvin is 10 to the minus 29 is the rate, and to 1 microkelvin is 10 to the minus 40. But that's not what happens according to good calculations in Dalgarno's group. Actually, below about 10 millikelvin, it's roughly constant rate. And again, 3 times 10 to the minus 17, the same as room temperature. So that's one interesting tidbit. Another one is the importance of symmetry. If you collide identical isotopic hydrogen atoms at room temperature, they'll all have about the same cross-section. But if you collide the identical H plus H, T plus T, because the scattering length is greatly different and the cross-section depends on the square of the scattering length, there's a huge difference in cross-section. D plus D is also interesting because if they're identical states of the two deuteriums, there is no S wave scattering, so there's a cross-section of zero at zero Kelvin. And the other isotopes also, you can see if you look at this, there's a constant decrease with reduced mass.
What do you mean with the number of -6.9?
Well, you can still calculate it, the cross section at that mass of a deuterium.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's so just a theoretical concept.
There's no SA scattering length, but
there's no actual, there is no scattering, but the scattering length.
If
calculated by normal scattering length,
using
the same potential, and just scale to that mass. And of course, a little larger mass before 4 somewhere, you'll get a bound state, and then it'll go to minus infinity and plus infinity. So you get even larger cross sections there. Anyway, just to illustrate, there's, on the other hand, there's some very nice experiments which I've referenced here on collisions of cesium-2, RBCS, and calculations on Li-2, and all of them give about the same result. Doesn't seem to vary strongly with vibrational quantum number. I mean, factors of 2 and 3 are not included there, but it's rather surprising to me, anyway. So those are things, one of the reasons we're interested in trying to make these target states for the alkali dimers, probably more emphasis on the polar ones like KRB and less on the homonuclear ones, but I think there are important issues in both. The target states include the lowest rho vibronic level, the ground electronic state being X, the excited metastable triplet being little a. Both of those formed in the lowest vibrational rotational level are good target states. The very nice Gila experiments I'll mention in a little while. And as I said, we haven't done these experiments in KRB, but we've seen the levels that could be used to produce the lowest level in KRB in the triplet. And the lifetimes of the triplet are highly uncertain, I would say, at this point. The homonuclear dimers also have the orthopara dichotomy, and therefore you can think of making the rotationally excited level with a different nuclear spin states, and those could also be interesting target states. You can think of some other possible homonuclear metastable levels, including the little a, little b state. This is the triplet pi. And of course, there are different omegas here too. I haven't labeled that. And for the molecular ions, you'd like to be able to make the lowest levels not only of the strongly bonding ion, but also of the anti-bonding ion, which is going to a ground state ground state alkali atom and a ground state ion. Okay. So I think all of you understand to some extent why the lowest rho vibronic level is of interest. There's no inelastic processes except hyperfine, and using the techniques used at Gila, you can even remove this hyperfine restriction. It's got the largest dipole moment in, I think, most of the heteronuclear alkalis, probably all. The largest dipole moment is in V equals zero, and if you go to levels near dissociation, it has quite small dipole moment. Another interesting thing, which we calculated a few years ago, was the radiative lifetime of KRB, and the shortest lifetimes, this is emission within the X state, so infrared emission, the shortest lifetimes are the order of a kilosecond. And they can, of course, be much longer. For example, the first excited rotational level or levels near dissociation.
Why are they so long?
What?
Why are the vibrational excited states so long lived?
That's what comes out of the calculation. There's not a big dipole derivative. That's part of it.
Just typical molecules, it's like...
I mean, there's actually a discussion in that paper of comparing with LIH, for example, as something with a much bigger dipole moment, and the scaling is about right. You have millisecond lifetimes but this is much heavier because of the mass. The mass also makes it... The strongest transitions for low levels are delta V of minus one. When you get up near dissociation, they can be much larger delta Vs because of the new cube factor in the A coefficient.
But why is the dipole moment going down because go higher in the separation?
Because there is no charge separation in the limit. You have two neutral atoms, not a plus ion and a...
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay?
It's still striking to me that it's kiloseconds versus what is milliseconds for typical molecules.
For many molecules.
Yeah.
CO has a long infrared lifetime, for example, is another.
But CO is a very... the dipole moment of CO is extremely small. The dipole moment of KRB is fairly...
It's fairly good. But it's much heavier.
So
there's a reduced mass factor because the new... You've got a new cube, and if your strongest emission is a delta V of minus one, and you correct for that, you get a lot of it. Anyway, the scaling is discussed at the back of this paper, if you're interested. Now, lots of ways of potentially forming X00. One is direct photoassociation of two atoms. That's hard to do because it involves large detunings, as we'll see when we look at the potential curves. And most photoassociation has been done within 100 wave numbers of the atomic line. There's a few experiments beyond that, but not very many. Second technique is to excite ultracold molecules. And in some sense, that's the related to the technique that involves the stimulated Raman of the ultracold molecules. But if you just excite them, then by spontaneous emission, you can form X00 with some efficiency. The alternatives are, first of all, you can look at states which I'll put down like this. Here's a long-range state. Here's a short-range state. And you have a lot of amplitude of the wave function over here. And if you have another state over here that, for example, lies right over V equals zero, the ground state, then you have the opportunity for a mixing between this wave function and that wave function. Although the one I've drawn would give a very small overlap. But it would be at the right distance to give strong emission. So that's one of the ideas of this resonant coupling, is to find a pair of states that are nearly degenerate, one at long range, one at short range, and make a strong transition. And we've been able to find that in KRB, and that's recently been published. The other one, this is a proposal of Robin Cote at Connecticut, where he and his group proposed what's called Feshbach optimized photoassociation, where the coupling is in the lower state as you come in rather than in the upper state. And that also can give you amplitude at short distance, which can then lead to efficient formation of the lowest level. This involves transfer directly from the atoms. It's much better to transfer from ultracold molecules. And in the case of the Gili experiments, they've started using magnetoassociation, using a Feshbach resonance to make what some people call a Feshbach molecule, and then transfer spectroscopically from that level up and then down to the lowest level. You can also conceive of more complex transfer, more than one step. You could go to some intermediate level and so forth. but these are some of the methods, and I'll talk about several of them. And so first of all, I want to talk about the most successful experiment, which has been that at Jilla. And I'm very pleased that Dajun Wang, who got his PhD at UConn before postdocing with Junyi, is in fact one of the co-authors of many of these papers. And first they made the Fischbach molecules, then they made the dense a gas of potassium 40, rubidium 87, so it's actually a fermionic gas. And then finally, they even purified the hyperfine state. And this is a long story, and it's their work, not mine, but I think it's very important to understand. I think one of their very important results was finding, as expected, that the low temperature dynamics of collision dynamics of KRB are exactly what you expect. This reaction of two KRBs that's only slightly exergic, 10 wave numbers is not much at normal temperature, but it is substantial at nanokelvin or whatever exactly the temperature was. And what you can see is it is well predicted. Of course, then they use an electric field to align the KRB dipoles, and in two dimensions, then or quasi two dimensions, this rate of reaction goes way down with the sixth power of the dipole moment, something like that. So now let's talk about the spectroscopy itself. Photo association is the process of just colliding atoms. It happens at high temperature as well as low temperature, but at low temperature, because KT is so small, tens of megahertz, you can easily interpret the spectra. It's a series of line-like continua, if you'd like, and you excite to excited states of KRB in different vibration rotational levels. Those levels then spontaneously emit. They can either go to form ultracold molecules in vibration rotational levels, either the X or the A, and typically in levels near dissociation, but not always. Or you can simply make atoms, the inverse of this process, and they can have the same or more kinetic energy than they had initially. The ultracold molecule spectra, on the other hand, takes these molecules and does spectroscopy on that, usually at lower resolution. This is done with a CW laser, so a few megahertz jitter in the laser. The ultracold molecule work is mostly done with pulsed dye lasers, and so there's a much broader bandwidth of the laser, and you don't have resolution, for example, of the rotational levels. There, however, is a nice technique called ion depletion spectroscopy that allows you to turn these low-resolution spectra into high-resolution spectra. But I'm not going to talk about that in detail when you need the resolution. So here are ab initio KRB potential curves, although the lowest two could be at, from the Tiemann's Fourier transform work, you wouldn't be able to see the difference. These, I believe, were three groups. First of all, Park and Jung and co-workers who did the calculation. And then there was the calculation of Robert Fricon and co-workers in Lyon. And then some of these states have also been calculated by Svetlana Kotichkova, who was here earlier in the workshop. And I'm sure there are some other calculations, but those are the ones we're here. These are the calculations from the Lyon group. And you can see it's reasonably complicated as an upper group of states. And of course, there are more states not far up here. And one of the reasons is that the residence lines of potassium and rubidium are the closest of the alkalis. If they were degenerate, you'd have an order to the minus 3 long-range interaction. But since they aren't degenerate, you instead have a strong C6 over R to the 6, which is either repulsive, as it is for the excited potassium states, or attractive, as it is for the excited rubidium states. The states that were, well, I'm not going to get into the details of all these states, but we have seen all of these in photoassociation or ultracold molecule spectroscopy. And of course, many of them have also been seen at short range by conventional spectroscopy now. Now, one thing you could think about would be direct photoassociation. So for example, if you went to V equal 2 of the first singlet pi state and just allowed spontaneous emission, the Frank-Condon factor is about 23%. And so, oops, go back. So if you were down here, this is about V equal 2, you can see you'd vertically go down to form V equals 0. Another possibility you might think of would be, well, can you go to the second singlet pi state? That's right at the dissociation limit. That would be great. But there's one problem. This is repulsive at long range. So it's very much a short range wave function inside this point, except that it is coupled by this avoided crossing to the first singlet pi state, which is long range. And so we spent some time looking for that coupling without a lot of success. We have seen a level of the second singlet pi state and so on, but I'll come back to that. So here are the, believe it or not, there are four bands here. The weakest is this pi state that I just mentioned. This is the second singlet pi, no, this is the first singlet pi state, V equals 60, but it's very much buried in the noise. This is a much lower state, and here are two other states. And this we have reconfirmed very nicely with further experiments. I'm not going to show you the improved spectrum, but we now know exactly where this V equals 17 level is in KRB. So short range potentials. These are the selection rules at long range, which we live with in photoassociation. And since the levels are near dissociation, Hund's case C is a better approximation in describing these states.
Excuse me, but yeah. I somehow missed out on what samples actually of KRB you have.
Oh, magneto-optical, these are magneto-optical traps.
Magneto-optical traps. Okay.
Right, right. And our colleagues in Korea have a supersonic molecular beam. So those are two different well-separated apparati. Okay. And so in this case, you can see that the X state can go to excited 0 plus and 1 states. The A state can actually go to all of them because there are two components, and the omega equal 1 can go to all four components of the excited states. So when we get to the molecular beam and the ultracold molecule, if we start with an A state ultracold molecule, we can reach all of the states. But at the same time, if we start with a molecular beam, that's in the lowest rho vibronic level already. And so we only reach those two states. And we don't know often what the omega quantum number is in the molecular beam. Sometimes you do. But the comparison of the two is a very powerful combination. This is what happens at long range. All of the excited potassium states have a repulsive long-range interaction, C6 over R to the 6th. All of the rubidium excited have an attractive C6. And they have been calculated nicely by, again, the Lyon group many years ago, and they're in good agreement with the experiment. This is where things get interesting. This is the connection between what happens at short range and what happens at long range. So here are all these states coming down, all these states going up, but there are a few that are not staying with the prescription, for example, this 4-0 plus state comes down and becomes the third single sigma plus state, which has been used as an intermediate state in STIRUP. This state here starts at the highest asymptote, and this potential involves a well out at large internuclear distance. Actually, it's this that then comes in here. So, just to show you what things look like. So now, photoassociation, spontaneous emission, and then the Rempe spectroscopy. Usually we use just two photons, and we go typically through states like the 4 singlet sigma plus and the 4 triplet sigma plus. Now, one thing that's very nice to know in the alkalis is the energetics. And one of the problems historically has been knowing dissociation energies accurately. And fortunately, there's a very nice way of combining photoassociation that starts at this limit and levels near dissociation, such as the V equal 87 level of the ground state of KRB, you can go from both limits to the same upper level. And then the difference is the binding energy of these weakly bound states. And so an example is shown on the next case. Here's the photoassociation spectrum. Here's the ion depletion spectrum. So we've added a CW laser to deplete the Rempe, and that's given very good resolution again for the Rempe spectrum. And you can see these two match up perfectly with those two. And from those, we could get the binding energy for J equal 2 and here for J equals 0. And so in this particular example, we're interested in the J equals 0 level of V equal 87. It's 23.397. With only about 2 milliwave number uncertainty. And that can be compared. We end up with this overall value, which is two orders of magnitude more precise. It agrees fairly well with Timon, who has questioned the AMIO 87 data. And that's still not resolved, but it's already the two here and here are agreeing to 0.04 wave numbers, and we'll sort that out in the coming months. Now, here we see how the depletion is done. You keep the Rempe laser fixed on a particular level, particular wavelength. You tune this laser when you deplete the lower state. That's when you get the dip that we saw in the spectrum there. These dips are just from depleting the spectrum. Now we turn to the combination of the molecular beam and ultracold molecule experiments. In this case, the Raman process, the STIRUP process that is been used both at JILA and at Tokyo by Inoue and co-workers, involves going from a level near dissociation to an excited state and then down to V equals 0, J equals 0. And in that case, you can see that the molecular beam first step, only step, is just the inverse of the second Raman step. And so there are two things to note about this. First of all, taking the ultracold molecule spectra and the spectra of the molecular beam, we actually can find out a great deal about the excited state perturbations and complications. And secondarily, there's actually a way of multiplying the two spectra together without doing any assignments that tells you what's the best Raman process to get from here to there. And so here's the idea. You start with a level somewhere near 4,400 wave numbers in the ultracold molecule, and you start with the lowest level in the molecular beam, You go to some upper level, there are sort of two choices. It can be a 0 plus, if you're going from 1 up 1 to 0 plus, or you can go up to 1 and use that with anything down below, including 0 plus. And the Stimler-Raman involves then the square of the matrix element between the A state and the excited state, the square of the matrix element between the excited state and the X state in 0, 0. And that's the relationship you have. So now, you can plot everything on the same scale by the excited state energy. So this is not the laser wavelength. This is the excited state energy, and it can be referenced to V equals 0, J equals 0, the ground state. So you have to shift. You have to know what the binding energy of the level near dissociation is. But we know that in KRB. And so we have a mysterious nomenclature over here, which is in the figure caption, but don't worry about it. I know it's what's what. The molecular beam is a lot easier to assign. These three ticks represent the B singlet pi, the first singlet pi state of KRB, and they are the strongest lines in the spectrum, although this is pretty close to that in this particular region. But notice the triplet. This is the second triplet sigma plus state. This and this, these two perturb each other, singlet and triplet, these two perturb each other. These two, and actually the third one's the triplet pi, also interact. So basically these pairs of singlet and triplet levels are mixtures of singlet character and triplet character. So they're the ideal windows for going from the little A state, which is triplet, to the X state, which is singlet. And if you simply shift the ultracold molecule spectra, so it's the excited state energy, not the energy with respect to the A state level, but with respect to the lowest level in the X state, then everything lines up. So this line is right there. Even these weak lines show up. This level is right there, and so on. You take the product of this spectrum times that spectrum, and this is what you get. The strongest primarily singlet transition is this one, which is going through the singlet pi level, and the strongest primarily triplet transition is this one, which is going through a triplet level, but they're very comparable in intensity, and we don't have to assign it. That's a neat thing. You can see that it is fairly complicated, and there's hyperfine structure and other things. Okay, so optimal products without assignment of the intermediate rho-vibronic state, which is seriously perturbed, especially in the heteronuclear alkalis. And the same MB spectra can be used with any ultracold molecule spectrum. So you don't have to start in V equals 0 or V equals 10 or V equals 35. You can start anywhere. And this is still the key that unlocks the stirrup process. And you can also do depletion spectra as another way of getting the spectrum of X00 if you want to, if you don't have a molecular beam handy. And that's what Dave DeMille is doing, who's using this approach to get the inverse of the second Raman step in RBCS. The shift of the ultracold molecule spectra can also be used to determine one of the two quantities when the other one is unknown, of course, by energy conservation. And to reference, there was the work of Ayakawa and co-workers in Inoue's group that also succeeded via a purely singlet path. So in that case, it's a little simpler. Spontaneous emission from PA formed resonantly coupled levels just was published in PhysReve last year. Jayita Banerjee was the lead person on that, and we have two excited states a long-range level and a short-range level that are coupled, and that gives reasonable production. I think the number was 5 × 10⁴ per second molecules without any elaborate laser setup like the Stingray-Raman. And other molecules, of course, have also been produced in V equals zero. In some cases, the mechanism is known. This is our work on K2 in 2000. DeMille and co-workers starting in 2005. Lithium cesium of Weidemuller in Heidelberg. Originally they thought that FOPA was involved, but now they don't think FOPA is involved, and they don't really have a good theoretical explanation. But they're able to do large detuning of the photo association. And this is, I guess, Nick Bigelow and co-workers. So other target states. The lowest rho-vibronic and a stable triplet by spontaneous emission of the second triplet pi formed by blue detuned photoassociation. So we've seen levels of this state, so we know exactly what wavelength we would photoassociate at, but we haven't done the experiment. In RB2, we have done the experiment and seen the V equals zero level. That's the addendum if we have time. And these are things, the lowest levels of the ion would be very nice to see. Autoionization to the lowest level was seen some years ago in Na2 at high temperature, but it hasn't been seen at ultra-cold temperatures. And some other interesting things, there are outer wells of some states. One of them in KRB plus is the antibonding well of the ion, and there is a well-matched lower well that has been observed that matches very nicely there. So I think I will skip that and ask for more comments and questions, and I'll put the other thing on in case we have time for that.
I'm curious to see your results on video too.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
So those you've seen before for KRB, and the state we're talking about is the second triplet pi. As I said, we've observed these states in ultracold molecule spectroscopy, but not from photoassociation. But photoassociation, we know exactly what to tune the laser to. And this barrier is right on top of V equals zero in the little A state. And the selection rules, you know, this is the long range in color.
Well, why is that significant? The barrier is right over the equals zero state. Why?
Okay. Well, I mean, that's in this well. You can't see how narrow it is, but there's a fairly narrow well which has four levels in it. And the V equals zero wave function will be localized around 18. Not 18. Yeah, I guess 18 here. So if we were going up, that would be interesting. The localization in the second triplet pi arises from the outer turning point of the high levels. Okay, and they tend to be near the barrier, which is close to the A state minimum, the little A state minimum. So that's the reason. So if we take the ab initio potentials, again, these, well, not purely ab initio, they're semi-empirical, but the work of Deleu and Aymar, and take their potentials in RB2, and we calculate the Frank-Condon factors for the highest levels of the various different omega states. We get 30% to 40% Frank-Condon factor in RB2, and in KRB, where we haven't done the experiment, but we get 34 to 42%. It could be slightly affected by the transition moment, but it's a fairly localized transition from the outer turning point of the upper wave function to the V equals zero of the lower wave function. So it'll be fairly diagonal. And this is just to show you the general scheme. The photo association is blue detuned because this is a repulsive long-range interaction here. In the case of two rubidium atoms.
Well, and how much blue detuned is
it? Well, it's 100 wave number time. It varies with the different omega states, the four omega states. So it's not a big blue detuning. There is another state, but unfortunately it's Ungerata, the triplet sigma plus Ungerata state, so that's forbidden from this. But it's allowed in the case of KRB, and that's not so bad. That's a 20% type. And so this shows the wells. So, so you know, it's 12,800 some wave numbers for the asymptote. The P3 halves asymptote. So it's up to maybe 500 wave numbers above the limit. And so all of these are the theoretical curves, but shifted by values between 17 and 100 wave numbers for these five wells, and they're fixed on the lowest level. And you can see the spacings are in very good agreement, and this is the one that gives this 37%, and we actually did an experiment based on that high level to show that, in fact, the V equals zero is formed. Here are the Frank-Conon factors. One is way up here at 37%. I'm sorry, zero is here. One is almost zero. Two and three are the order of 5%. And nothing else is significant as you go out to 8 or to 40 Bohr, to 40 vibrational quantum. And here's the spectrum. All of the levels here that are marked are assignments out of V double prime equals zero of the A state. So we're starting with a J prime of one in the upper state. So in principle, it can emit to 0, 1, and 2. But in fact, we're not resolving the rotation in these Rempe experiments. But definitely, if we have the lowest level, it can only be 0, 1, and 2. It cannot be higher rotational levels. This is collision-free. And all of those lines, as I said, are out of V double prime equals 0, the A state. There are other lines. There are other transitions, for example, 2 and 3, which I said are about 5%. You can see those in some of the weaker lines. But almost all of the strong lines are from V double prime equals 0. I think that's the last. Yep. So, questions?
What was the formation rate?
It was quoted in that the reference. I think it's about between 10 to the 4th and 10 to the 5th molecules per second.
And that's sort of set by, I guess, or limited by just the density of your molecule, or is there any power limited? saturating this?
Yeah, you're close to saturation of the transitions, but it's a continuous process. In principle, you don't have to ionize them.
Yes, yes.
So you should be able to build up a reasonable density, depending on what the relaxation is. So there's, in principle, there could be singlet-triplet mixing of some of the some of these levels, but other ones should be pretty much unperturbed at all. The mixing is only due to the hyperfine. That's the only thing that spoils the UG symmetry. Mm-hmm.
But into the vehicle zero, then that would be double vehicle zero state. That's mixed or I'm just curious.
It's really, I don't think it's expected to be significantly mixed now. There are some measurements in Innsbruck of RB2 lifetimes, and
of the triplet.
But they're all I don't remember exactly what. Anyway, there's a quotation in the paper which I have here. Thought I had here. Yeah, here it is. Anyway, I can look at it after we're done. It's between 9 and 3.5 times 10 to the fourth molecules per second is the quoted rate. Between 9 times 10 to the fourth as an upper bound and 3.5 times 10 to the fourth as a lower bound. Those are the estimates.
But, is that published? Is that paper?
Yeah, this was published in this ultra-cold molecule issue of Physical Chemistry, Chemical Physics, reference.
I can get it.
Yeah. It's 13 months. It's got lots of eights. 2011. So. Yep. So, any other questions?
Is this specific to rubidium, or do you think
that? Well, we looked at Li2, and Li2 doesn't have a well.
Yeah, but
at the second triplet bond. I would guess cesium does. I'm not positive. Aleutian co-workers have done a nice recent set of calculations on cesium 2. I think there's a well S. K2, I believe, does have a shallow well.
So for heavy ones, it would recommend going glutathione.
To form triplets, this is a nice way of making triplets, and there's no semi-Raman transfer. It just happens. And there's also the technique, the optical pumping technique that PA has developed. We're essentially purifying the vibrational distribution, exciting everything except V equals zero, and ending up back in V equals zero.
This technique you said forms primarily V equals V double prime equals zero.
Yeah.
And what are the rotational states low?
Well, two is the highest.
Yeah.
Just so by the selection rules. And we haven't done any experiment. We could do a depletion experiment to try to look at the rotational structure. We've not done that.
Are you able to look at things like collisional lifetimes or so, or cure rates? I mean, can you collect them from?
We aren't set up to do that well right now. Mm-hmm. We should do it. We have an optical trap, but we haven't done this in the optical trap.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be the way to do it.
Second record will report the data next week.
Well, we're not set up to do rendering, but we could do something like create them and look for, you know, collisional lifetime and stuff, the atoms, right. The remaining atoms. So we can sort of detect that we have molecules of different things.
Right, right.
Can you look at any green lines?
Yes, we could, in principle,
presumably, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we ought to.
Should we take a short break?
Take a short break and then hear from
Robert. 3-minute break and then we'll resume. Robert, close the class.